It's time for the Rose Chat Podcast, a podcast dedicated to celebrating the world's most beloved flower, the rose. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleef and Teresa Byington as they chat with rose lovers and experts from around the globe. With each episode, you'll gain valuable knowledge and insights to achieve the rose garden you've always dreamed of. Listen now as we explore the world of roses.
Hey friends, today is going to be a particularly fun show for me. My guest is Dee Nash, someone I have a long garden history with, even though we live 700 miles apart and we've never met in person. We started as sort of garden pen pals, following each other's blogs many years ago. Then we both ventured into podcast. Her podcast is The Garden Angelus that she does with another garden friend, Carol Michael. And through the years, I've suffered with Dee from afar, especially as she battled Rose Rosette in the early days of Rose Rosette. Many people did not know about it, didn't know what to do, and she lost all of her many roses. So I was there for that in the background. I even bought my children her gardening book titled The 20-30-something Garden Guide when they were starting out. My daughter tells me that I actually gave it to her twice, but it is a great book. And currently, we chat very regularly via social media. So this is proving once again why, even with all the warts, and there are many, we're grateful for social media. And I'm grateful that my friend Dee is here today. So hey, Dee, welcome to Rose Chat.
Hey, Teresa, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I'm looking out the window. Is spring completely crazy in Oklahoma?
I wouldn't say it's completely crazy. It's been way too warm, and today we had a reset, and it was 35 this morning, and then today is, right now, it's about 49, which is a little low, but not real low. I heard you guys have snow.
We had some sprinkles this morning of snow, and I think in a storm a couple of days ago, we had hail, and it's actually probably about 3 weeks early for most things. But it's cold now, and it's going to be cold for another few days. So spring hasn't quite sprung, but we're close.
We're getting close, too.
Great. We love it. We love it. Now, Dee, you've grown a lot of roses through the years. So I'm wondering how you became so interested in roses.
I think I was always interested in them. They were the first thing I tried to grow, which I find funny now as an experienced gardener. My grandmother had a rose that was on either side of her porch. And I'm sure it was probably Blaze or Improved Blaze. And I used to sit on that porch in a porch swing and read books. So that's probably the beginning.
I've got to tell you, it's truly amazing to me how often through the years of this podcast that I've heard, I grow roses because of my grandmother.
Yeah.
So a special note to those of us who are Grammys, those little ones are watching us.
Yes, and we should have them smell the roses because smell is our long, you know, our olfactory sense is our longest sense, and that they'll remember that.
Oh, I sure remember that. That's one of the things that guides me. Now, what were some of the first ones you planted?
Oh, I can remember just like it was yesterday. I planted Tiffany, Double Delight, and Queen Elizabeth, and I bought them at Walmart. And I was 19 years old, and, you know, I kept them alive, which is pretty impressive because, you know, Walmart roses aren't the best, but I loved them, and I mean, I really did fall in love. But those, you know, of those now, I might grow Queen Elizabeth again, but not the other two, I don't think.
My first experience was very similar, Mr. Lincoln, Double Delight, and Tiffany, but yeah. I don't think I probably gave them the best place to dig their roots into. We've got a lot of Indiana gray clay, kind of like modeling clay. Yeah. And they struggled and didn't last very long. So, yeah.
Oh, it happened.
They were pretty. They smelled good. Well, you know, another memory you have evoked with those rose names is, did you ever do the test roses with Jackson and Perkins back in those days?
I think I did, although I don't know for sure. I mean, I was a poor college student, so maybe not. Tell me about this program they had.
Well, it was the first time I'd ever heard of anything like this. And I think you bought the roses, which yeah, I was glad to do. I wanted to be a part of the process. You know, I really thought I was part of the process. So I think I bought four roses. I did this for maybe 2 or 3 years, and I bought four roses, and they came unnamed, and you tested them, and you let them know how they did in your garden. And there was one I remember. It was a yellow rose. It was so pretty, and I was going to name it for my daughter. So if they chose your rose, I think you got to name it. So anyway, I did that, and most of them didn't do very well. You know, they were probably all hybrid teas, but you didn't know. And, you know, that was just like the first time that I was really a part of the rose process, and I loved it.
I think it's fun. It just sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was. Okay, now let's move on to your beautiful garden. Oh, my goodness. Tell your listeners about it.
Okay, so I garden about an acre and a half on 7.5 acres of land. And in my upper pasture, I have a small meadow, which is kind of a prairie meadow. And I've been working on that for about 4 years because meadows are hard. And then we live east of I-35, which means we live in the sandier, hillier part of Oklahoma, which has trees. And we live in a wooded area, and it's not what people think Oklahoma looks like. And so I have pockets of clay, but not pure clay. And the wind does blow, but it doesn't blow like it does out west. And most of my roses are planted within the perennial gardens. But lately, I've been planting a bunch of them in pots because I'm kind of enjoying that right now. And let's see, what else can I think about? I guess I like how the pots lift those roses a little bit higher so I can really see them. And I don't have to bend over as much to trim them up. Mm-hmm. And you can also fertilize them the way you want to. And there's basically no weeding and no digging around a plant that's prickly. And I probably have, I said 7 when we were talking about it before, but I think it's more like 12 now in containers.
That is garden rose math. You know, that is rose math.
Yeah, and I think I ordered like 5 more because we've been talking a lot.
We have been talking a lot, and it is so fun. You know, and I'm glad you talked about containers because it is such a good option for so many. You know, the trend for smaller gardens, and roses are wonderful in containers, and it's just great to have them up close to you. Even though I've got tons out, I like to have a few just up close to you. You can really enjoy them. Yeah,
I think so too.
That's so easy to do. Well, we talked about some good stuff, but if it's going to be good stuff, bad stuff, let's talk about some of the very bad stuff that you've had to deal with through the years.
Well, you want to talk about Rose Rosette first?
Oh, yeah. That's how I found you. I had it a few years after you, and I couldn't find any information. And in all of the rigmarole of trying to find something, I found you.
Yeah, I first saw it on New Dawn because at the end of my garden at the very back, I had a giant, like I had New Dawns on either side of an arbor and they went all the way down the fence because, you know, that's a really powerful rose. And they were gorgeous and thorny and I loved them so much. And one day they had a witch's broom and I didn't know what it was. And so I just cut it off because I didn't know what it was. And then I did some searching and I found Nana Andra's blog and she had it before I had it. And she said what it was and that it was deadly. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then it started showing up and popping up in other places because that took me about a year to identify it. And then I found it on Zephyrine Druin. And or Zephyrine, I don't know how you pronounce her name. And that made me sad because I loved her and she was on another arbor. And ultimately, I lost 80 out of 100 roses.
Oh man.
Over a 2-year period. I cried a lot back then because I didn't see any hope at the time. But now I realize that, you know, it's just one of those things and you just have to work through it, get it out of your garden as fast as you can, and then watch for it because, you know, it could come back. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah. I have had very little. I don't live in as windy of a place as you do, and wind is not our friend when it comes to those little mites. But I've only lost a few, but I did find it very early when many people around here did not know. And so a lot of information was a little sketchy, but boy, we've got really good information right now. We've got wonderful research happening. So there is a lot of hope now for sure.
Yeah, it's totally changed. And you know, the same thing happened with daylilies. For daylilies, it was daylily rust and everyone was totally freaked out. but now we've learned how to deal with it. And so it's okay. You know, we'll figure this out too.
Yes, we will. We don't live in the gardens of Eden. So, and that's part of the fun, really, you know, these stories, you know, and working through these problems and meeting people that, you know, share the same scenarios, you know, that there's a beauty in that too.
There really is. And I wrote about it quite a bit, and I think that helped people. And then, you know, I still see it in the city. I don't see it much out in the country because I think what happens is certain roses get planted in like a cul-de-sac. And then when they get it, nobody digs them up and gets rid of them, you know. And so it can spread in neighborhoods easier than it can spread in my garden now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, and with anything, we've learned early detection is so, so important in removing it. And I was just at a seminar this weekend and they were talking about rose rosette. And they said, you know, if you're working and you're busy and you can't get it out of your garden, you can cover it with a bag, you know, at least get it covered so that those little mites can't blow around and, you know, do what you can when you can as quick as you can. But the ultimate goal is still remove it and destroy it. So there's really nothing that we can spray on them, regardless of what you might hear on the internet. You know, there's lots of things out there. People actually sell things that they say is a cure, but there is no cure yet, but there are some things coming for sure.
They're working on it, but we're not there yet. And so in the meantime, you know what? It's okay if you have to let go of a rose. In fact, I was in a client's garden because I do garden coaching. And we walked around the corner and there was this poor little sad standard rose that was just eaten up with it. And I said, okay, first thing you do in the garden is get rid of this, because she wanted to plant roses. She's a romantic and she had just ordered a bunch of David Austins. And I said, do not plant those David Austins until you get this out of here and trash it. Don't try to compost it. Things like that.
Absolutely. No, we don't want those things around. They're little, but they're mighty. So Dee, I'm wondering, how long did it take for you to start planting again? You lost 80 out of 100. I'm sure you're a little discouraged.
Yeah, it took me I first wanted to make sure it was completely gone. And it takes a while for it to show up. So I'd say it took me 5 years. And then once I realized it was not in my garden anymore, because remember, my garden was just eaten up with it. It was, you know, nobody knew what it was. And I had kept cutting it off because nobody knew what it was. And so my garden was eaten up. And so I waited until every bit of it was gone. And then I think it was about 5 years. And then I thought, okay, I can put a rose back in. And I did. And that was, I think, pretty brave at the time.
Oh, it was. So do you remember which rose you planted first?
You know, I think it was Anna's Promise from one of those Downton Abbey roses, and I've since lost it. But, you know, it was a hybrid tea, and I think I did enjoy it for about 3 years before it finally passed away.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us some of the care tips, you know, now that you're growing so many roses again. So how do you take care of them in your climate?
In my climate, I just try to give them the best soil they can possibly have. And then I trim them back in the spring. Most of mine are, I have a few English roses. I have some shrub roses. I only have a couple of hybrid teas, special ones that I love. And if I grow them in pots, I just buy the best potting soil I can find, which I pay good money for good potting soil. And until, we're going to talk about this later, but until I was diagnosed with alpha-gal syndrome, my favorite potting soil was Happy Frog. It has bat guano in it and alfalfa and a bunch of great stuff in it. So I used that potting soil, but I've had to change that. And then in my own garden, I just dig them a good big hole, put lots of good stuff back into the hole and good fertilizer. I like to use organic fertilizer so far. I love Mills Rose Magic, but there's a lot of good fertilizers out there. And I just put in really, my soil is really good now. I mean, I've been gardening here for 35 years, and I did not plant a rose anywhere where I had a rose before. So that was kind of a change, you know, I didn't put it in the same hole. And then I just take good care of them and I trim them up, you know, deadhead them I deadhead them regularly, but I try to make sure if I'm going to open the garden, I do it the month before so that they bloom right when everybody comes through. And I can't think of anything else. Just, well, everything's on drip irrigation. I have drip irrigation.
Oh, that helps a lot. We don't have drip here, but we're beginning to think about it. Yeah, we're
here. It's kind of essential because, you know, it's hot, it's dry. We have a limited amount of water. I don't want them to get black spot if I can help it. Mm-hmm. And I try to give them good air circulation, which we have wind, so that helps.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Let's go on and talk about weather, because weather is pretty important to your growing process.
Okay, so we live on the prairie, and even though I'm somewhat protected by trees and other things, we have some wild weather. And last year, a terrible wildfire swept through my neighborhood. It was March 30th, 2023. I'll never forget.
Oh,
and we lost our horse barn. My garden had a lot of damage. A lot of my irrigation was damaged. I lost some Japanese maples. I'm trying to think if I lost any roses. You know, I didn't. I didn't lose any roses, which is surprising. The way it swept through, it burned some other things, but it spared the roses. And that was pretty wild. And then lately, our winters are pretty mild, although it can get really cold. And last winter was pretty mild until we had like a 2-week stretch of really freezing weather. And I had a couple of roses in pots that were unhappy because they never went dormant.
Those
Valentine roses are not very happy. But you know what? They're on their own roots. I've cut them way back. I put them in the sun. I think they'll be okay. And then let's see, we often have drought in the summer, hence the drip irrigation. And that's part of it. And then I live in the woods. Do you want to talk about Lone Star ticks yet, or you want to wait?
Well, I want to know how hot, when you say your summers are hot and dry, how hot is hot for you?
I mean, it can get up to 114, but it doesn't usually. But we do get over, in August, we tend to stay in the 90s the whole month of August, and sometimes we are in the 100s. And then in 2011, we had 60 consecutive days of over 100. That's unusual, but you just never know what kind of summer you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. So drip irrigation is going to be real important if you're gardening in Oklahoma, for sure.
I think so.
Yeah. Probably could do it without, but boy, it's going to be a lot better. Well, you know, through the years, you've introduced me to quite a few things, but the thing that we're going to talk about now, you introduced me to, and I'm not all that happy about it, I'll tell you.
Alpha-style syndrome.
Let's tell us everything you got.
Okay, so really quickly, alpha-gal syndrome is spread by the Lone Star tick. People think that means it's from Texas. It isn't. It was actually described by Carl Linnaeus way back in the 1700s because the female has a white dot on her back that he thought looked like a star. They are host for a lot of bad diseases, including Ehrlichia, alpha-gal syndrome, which is the thing that is rampant across the eastern part of the United States, but it has hit that I-35 corridor now, and those ticks are moving north because they like the woods. And alpha-gal syndrome makes you allergic to meat and sometimes dairy, often dairy, meat byproducts, including those that are in our medicines. Not everybody is that sensitive, but I happen to be. And I was diagnosed back in October, and I have had to change my entire life because of it. So if people want to go look, I have a blog post on it. And I've also done a reel on the clothing that you should wear. And the ticks are now in Indiana. I'm sorry. I'm just so sorry. The interesting thing is people know a lot more about Lyme disease, and that is spread by the black-footed tick. And we also have Lyme. But there's so far no cure for alpha-gal syndrome, but alpha-gal syndrome can go into remission if you're not bit by another tick, which is why I think I only wear permethrin clothing to garden now, and it's bonded to the fabric. But I'm super susceptible, and hopefully if you don't get bitten by ticks again, you have it, you know, it can wear off over time. I happen to be also fume reactive, which is a real bummer. So perfumes bother me, meat smells. I wear a mask when I go out to shop and stuff.
What are some other symptoms that someone might look for?
Okay, so you've gone out to dinner with your husband or spouse, and you have a nice dinner, say a steak, and then you go home and maybe you had a glass of red wine with it. And in the middle of the night, you wake up and you can't breathe, or you pass out, or your hands and feet itch. Also, if you get bitten by a tick and it doesn't heal, that's a sign of alpha gal. All of us, a sign of alpha gal. So there's a blood test to be tested. The interesting thing about these ticks is they don't just carry the diseases that I mentioned. They also carry two deadly diseases that have just been discovered. And one is the Bourbon disease, named after Bourbon County, Kentucky, and the Homeland disease, because it's from the center part of the United States. And I don't know as much about those, except for they are considered deadly. They're somewhat rare, but it's another good reason to protect yourself. So to find out if you suspect you have alpha gal, like you got, and the thing about these ticks is the baby ticks, the larval ones, they hunt in groups. And so you might get 5 bites like I did last summer, which is what set me over the edge, I think. And so they're teeny, teeny, tiny, just the smallest, like a pinprick. And sometimes people don't know they've been bit. But if you have a sore that won't heal for like a month, that might be one of those bites. So there's a blood test. And most doctors don't know about it very well in Oklahoma or probably anywhere along that corridor. But they're starting to learn. So it's pretty bad. Yeah.
Dee, some of the things that you've had to change, where did you find animal products? Some unusual places that you found animal products? What about makeup or lotions and things like that?
All of my makeup is now vegan. All of my body products are vegan. Ziploc bags have gelatin in them to keep them from clinging. So I had to switch to another type of a bag. And I switched to a compostable one, which I kind of am glad anyway. Yeah. Let's see, hair products. I had to switch my salon to a vegan salon because of the fumes in salons. That sent me to the hospital. Medicines, most of my medicines are compounded, and the rest of them I check on a place called veganmed.org, and they will tell you if there's a version of that that does not contain mammal. I changed my pharmacies. I have a compounding pharmacy and a local pharmacist who helped me find medications. So anytime I'm prescribed anything, I have to go and check it. And I had to learn about something called NDC numbers. When I say it changed my life, I mean it really did change my life.
Oh my goodness.
But I'm really hopeful. I'm really hopeful because I have a really strong belief in God. And I know he cares for us. And I also know that he has helped me out time and time again when I've had to figure something out. And I have hope that scientists will eventually figure out a way to treat this better. They're just not there yet. Mm-hmm. So, and in the meantime, my goal is don't get bit by ticks and don't ingest any mammal and don't put any mammal on my body or anywhere else.
Well, I'm going to say to our friends that if they want to know information about alpha gal, that they go to your blog, reddirtramblings.com. Friends, she does extensive research, and I can tell you that she is telling me now that it is in Indiana, and I had just spoken to a doctor recently and mentioned Dee's situation, and they said, well, you don't have to worry about that. This is Indiana. So some of this information hasn't gotten everywhere yet, but she has found some great sources of information. So if you're needing more information, do go to reddirtramblings.com. You can also find Dee in lots of other places on social media. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. Dee, so sorry for this. We'll be praying for your health. And
thank you.
And but what a gift it is to all of us to have you tell your story and share this information with us. You're such a wonderful researcher that, we can trust what we hear from you. And that is a huge bonus for us. Whoo, that is two uglies, Dee. That was red rosette, alpha gal. Let's just leave those behind. I wish you actually could. Let's go to some good things. I want to hear about your roses. What are you growing?
So most roses do great in Oklahoma. People are really surprised by that. But our dry air, because we don't have as much humidity as the Southeast, we don't fight black spot as hard. So that's good, right?
Yes, that's good.
Of the ones that are hardest to grow, that would be your hybrid teas. And I put all of my English roses on the east side of my house so that they get really good morning sun and they get some afternoon shade to protect them. So anything that is delicate, it goes on the east side of the house. Morning sun is our best friend, right? Mm-hmm. And then I love Dr. Griffith Buck roses. I still love Carefree Beauty, which was the one that was introduced to the public in 1977. Mm-hmm. I still love it. And I love September Song, which mm-hmm. I bought because my birthday's in September. Aww. And I just grow almost anything that strikes my fancy. But lately, because you and I have been chatting a lot, I now have Quietness coming.
Ooh, yes. Oh, what a good one.
Very excited about that one. I already grow Desdemona. Do you have Desdemona?
I do. She's a pretty one.
She is so easy to grow.
Yeah,
she's really, really healthy rose. Harlow Carr, which is really, really prickly, but a great rose, would make a great hedge, right?
Yes, yes. Pioneers that preceded us would have loved a hedge of that.
Yeah, no kidding. And then I really love Gabriel Oak. I grow it in a pot. That's a fabulous rose.
That's good news because I just have it coming. I have that one.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. And then you and I talked the other day about Peggy Martin, which I loved your episode with Peggy Martin, but I've listened to it twice.
She is just an absolutely amazing person. She's been through so much and she knows so much. She knew so much before she went through so much. And then she has now given us this beautiful rose that bears her name. So it's a special, special Roseanne story.
It is. And she, you know, mine after the ice storm of October 2020, she went all the way to the ground. And I was afraid I'd lost her because we had a lot of cold after that ice storm. But you know what? I've got her back and she's roared back from the roots and she's fine. So
yeah, she's going to get fussy with ice. She did that for me as well here. But as soon as it warms up, she's going to scamper right back up that trellis. So it doesn't take her too long to recover. But I've had the same thing to happen when we get those just nasty ice storms or a real icy low temperature, you know, at an inopportune time. But she's going to come back.
Mm-hmm. So those are just some of the ones I grow. I mean, I if I'm going to grow a rose, it has to really appeal to me. It usually needs to have some fragrance. It needs to have really good staying power in the garden, or I'll go ahead and take it out. But I do that with a lot of things because I mean, it's a big garden. I don't have a lot of time to fuss over stuff anymore.
Yeah. We're losing a tree, an ornamental crab apple tree, and so it's going to give me a little more space for roses up close and personal to our patio. Woo-hoo! Which is kind of fun. I'll miss the tree, and I think we will replant a tree eventually, but you know, I think, oh, it'll be nice to have the roses a little bit closer to us. And there's so many right now. I'm actually doing something I've never done before. I'm actually eliminating a lot of roses that I love. So I try some new ones because there's so many good ones coming out. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, you know, I've got the space. If I just, you know, so I'm sharing some of my, you know, if a rose in my garden doesn't do well, I don't share that with anyone. I just trash it. But if they're pretty and they do well, I love to share them. And so I do that. And so this year I've done that more than normal. And I've got several coming, Dee.
So who's coming? I want to know who's coming.
Oh,
which
my
ones?
Goodness, there's so many. I've got
just name a couple.
I got on a roll with the anything that said cream colored, cream veranda, chantilly cream, top cream, and then I got all excited about celestial nights, and then the rose geek said I had to have bolero and sweet mademoiselle, so she won me over on those. And then I've got the David Austin's coming. I've got Eustacia Vye. I mean, who could not? I mean, everyone says, oh my gosh, Eustacia Vye. So I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to have Eustacia Vye.
Yeah, I have Eustacia Vye. I love her.
And then
she's
my
beautiful.
Children, oh, good. My daughter lives in England, so I had to get Elizabeth. I mean, seriously.
Of course not.
And Emily Bronte, I've never had that one, so decided to give that one a shot. So we'll see. You know, just got a lot of new stuff coming, making room.
Oh, that's exciting. That's exciting. That's the best.
Oh, no, it's so fun. Well, I just hope you love Quietness. I think it's Dr. Buck's prettiest. It's healthy and it's fragrant. And I just think it works in just about every garden. Everyone that I know that grows it just goes, oh, quietness. And I give it as gifts to people who are first timers. And, you know, I get these pictures. It's the only rose they have. And it's so pretty. It looks like a little hyper tea, but it isn't. It's definitely a shrub, healthy shrub. And it's got a little fragrance. So you, it's like the whole package in one rose.
It does. Well, I'm excited about it. I'm going to try growing it in a pot. We'll see what happens. I have a great big pot for it.
Oh, good. Because it gets pretty big in time. Another one that I recommend a lot to people, I don't know if you have this one, is Savannah. It's a hybrid tea, but it is a performer. It's gorgeous. It's fragrant and easy. It's a big tea.
Yeah, I bought it because of you. I was at the nursery and I texted you and I was like, is this the Savannah? And you said yes. And so I snatched it up. It's actually sitting in my greenhouse waiting to go somewhere. I'm not sure where, but I'll find a spot. I will find a spot.
Oh, my goodness. So, well, you've given us some great things to think about. You know, if they're growing in Oklahoma and they're growing in Indiana, my goodness, they're growing anywhere because we're not California. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. We're not Portland, Oregon, where out there, I swear, my daughter lived out there for many years, and I saw roses that were the biggest roses I'd ever seen in my life. And then she moves to England, and there you go again. But in Indiana. It's a little tougher, but with these new roses that are coming out, we can do it. We can.
And they grow well in Texas, too. I have friends who grow them in Texas. In fact, there's an Heirloom Rose Society, and a bunch of them live in Texas, and I'm a member of it, even though I'm in Oklahoma, because I've spoken to them before, and they do really well with a bunch of roses. So roses can grow in a lot of different conditions as long as they're given good mulch, good fertilizer, good soil, and you watch them. You have to watch them, you know, and if they've got a problem, deal with it.
I'm a great leaf picker. You probably are too. If I see black spot coming, I'm going to, you know, I've got a bucket with me and I'm going to pick those leaves. So, you know, the longer the season goes, the more you have to pick, but I'm a great leaf picker. Just kind of keep
me on, too.
You know. And you know, and if you're going to grow roses, you just need to go out and be with them. And if you're with them, you're going to know. It's just like your children. You knew when they were getting sick long before they knew they were getting sick because you're around them all the time. So enjoy That's your true. Roses up close and personal, and you'll catch those things quickly.
And that's true of Japanese beetles too. Someone asked me the other day after I did that Instagram reel on planting a rose in a pot. Mm-hmm. And they said, how do you grow roses with Japanese beetles? Which, yes, they're in Oklahoma now. They weren't.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we've had them for a couple of years. But you know what? So far, they stay in kind of the same area of my garden. And I just know they're there. And I just walk right outside with the soapy water and I start getting rid of them. Because the quicker you get them, the less they are able to multiply. Because, you know, they put out that scent, that pheromone that says, oh, look here. Come join us at the buffet. And that helps too. And there's not much else I know of to do. What do you do?
That's what I do too. You know, there's no, to me, there's absolutely no need in spraying them. I mean, you can just dump them in water and they're going to die. You know, you can't prevent them. To my way of thinking, there's just they're going to come. But we've had fewer the last couple of years for sure. But Dr. Wyndham says that also when you shake them off, if you've got the time, cut off those leaves because all the stuff they leave behind is very attractive. So
that makes sense because of the pheromone. So
it does.
That totally makes sense.
If you can just cut those leaves off, then you're much better because of what they leave behind. So I'm gonna go with Dr. Mark Wyndham on that one. He knows
that's
things.
Really good advice.
Yes. Plus, it looks terrible. I mean, they're just the nastiest thing. I mean, they just are the worst.
Duh. Yeah, they're pretty gross.
They are. Well, Dee, I just love all of your simple tips. You know, people, we tend to overcomplicate things. And that's what I love about you. You're so no nonsense. And your gardens are just gorgeous. And your whole process is so good. You're so fun to follow. You're so fun to know, Dee.
So are you. I'm so glad we're friends.
I know. I'm too. Well, thanks so much for joining me today and for sharing your garden experiences with us.
Oh, it was so much fun. I just am glad you asked.
Well, Dee, I just appreciate all you do to encourage other gardeners, and I hope you have a wonderful spring.
You too, as soon as it gets here.
Yes, it's coming. It is coming. Friends, we're so glad you joined us too. Remember, you can keep up with Dee at reddirtramblings.com or listen to the podcast at The Garden Angelist. And she's very active on Instagram. So wherever you grow this season, I hope it's going to be a season of joy for you. And friends, until next time, it's happy gardening.
You've been listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington, expert rose gardeners who want to help you achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Don't miss an episode. Listen anytime on our website at rosechatpodcast.com or listen on the go via the Rose Chat app on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Share this podcast with your social networks and join us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by using the hashtag RoseChat. Join us next time for another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. The Rose Chat Podcast is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.